Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the always updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And I've had questions about where people can hear previous shows. Well, if you go to huntrealestate.com, go to our blog, all of our previous shows are there. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and through our links to Phoenix, Arizona, and also Boston, Massachusetts, where we also have offices. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, NMLS number 37405. Hunt Mortgage is an equal opportunity lender. Call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing experience and your needs and wants as well, and that is our guarantee. And ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's very competitive market, that's a distinct advantage. We have multiple offers on many listings these days, and you want to make sure that your offer shines through, and you want to make sure that it's presented by a true professional. And I encourage you to contact a Hunt Real Estate professional. Call 633-9400 for a reference. You can call Hunt Mortgage today, though, at 633-3700 for your financing experience, and we guarantee that that will be personalized, customized, and it will knock your socks off, no matter where you're coming from or what your experience has been so far. So check out that low-rate guarantee, and don't forget about the first-ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in our community and all across upstate, and through our links also to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts. All you have to do is dial 716-631-4800 locally, enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want, you'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property. All automatically, just that fast, anytime in any market we serve. Faster than going to the web or even dialing up on your phone somehow or taking a picture of it. All you have to do is dial that number, 631-4800. We have a very active market, and I encourage you to contact a real estate professional, Hunt Real Estate Professional, to learn more about how you can participate in this market. 633-9400 is the one-stop shop for you. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and even the Rochester Americans. It's interesting today, I just heard about the Blue Jays playing here in town, and the fact that, you know, they had two wins yesterday, and it was, you know, it's always surprising to hear that no one was there to watch that game, which is too bad. We are broadcast live here on WBN 930 AM, and if you'd like to reach us here in the studio to participate in today's show, you can reach us at 803-0930. That's the same number if you'd like to text us, 803-0930. That's 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls. Join us here on the air at Our House. This is a very special show because it's the first time in over 20 years that we've had a guest, the same guest, on 2 weeks in a row. And it's particularly important because I've done a little poll this week of people I know just asking what they think the most important issue in our community is. And it's all over the news, obviously. And that, of course, is our educational system in the pandemic era that we happen to be in. And to help us with that, and really as a guiding light in that whole process, is the superintendent of the Buffalo Public Schools, Dr. Kreiner Cash. Good morning, Dr. Cash.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you back again, and I really appreciate you coming back 2 weeks in a row. And I meant what I said. I've been asking people what they think is the most important issue in our community, and it seems to be that you're at the center of it. So just tell me, how does this add a lot of pressure to your existence? I'm sure you have a pressurized existence anyway, but I mean, do you feel, is it extraordinary these days for you, Dr. Cash?
I think so. In some ways, in other ways, the way I was raised by my parents and the way I've approached my education and my career, this is part of the journey. This is part of the work. So it's not unlike other pressures that people are facing all the time in their particular journeys and lives. So, yes, it's certainly a challenge, but it's one that we're up to, and it's one that certainly leadership matters to help guide us through. So that's what we're counting on, our training, our experience, and our leadership skills.
You know, you've brought a lot of innovations to our school system here in Buffalo, and I think one of the great innovations is the community school concept. How have they fared in during these times?
Well, they were well rooted and instituted across 28 different schools in our system, which is almost half of our school systems. We have 60 schools, and to have 28 community schools where a few years ago we had none, I think is pretty remarkable. And they're faring well even during this time, because the critical partnership that we have with Say Yes Buffalo is stepped up, and they have stepped up and working very closely with us to make sure that even in a virtual learning environment, they continue to make contact with families and children and provide support services for our many, many families. So they continue to thrive. They are also the site where every 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we deliver meals to families, and we deliver laptops and computers and hotspots and so forth. The distribution of those sometimes goes into the community school sites. While we have an epicenter for distribution of laptops and computers at our school 28, we also, when parents aren't able to pick up at school 28, they come to the community schools. And we've served over 3 million meals, Peter. Over 1,300,000 meals to date out of those community schools. So a lot of services happen there. Social, emotional, legal support services, mental health services, on and on for our children and families happen at our community school hubs. So
that to me is
they're doing great.
That to me is one of the most brilliant moves that a community like ours could ever have seen, because of the fact that if a child is in school from 8:30 to 3 or whatever the normal time frame would be under normal conditions, oftentimes they go home to an empty house, and the community schools have really enriched the whole educational experience by extending the day a little bit and also providing a total resource center, as you just described, in terms of other resources, not just for the student, but for the family as well, which is something I think is essential, and I know you do too, to a well-rounded experience for young people today in a city like ours.
We operate on Saturday as well, Peter, from usually 9 to 12 or from 10 to 1 on Saturdays, and families have really, really appreciated the structured activity, the multiple array of activities that are offered on Saturdays for their children and family. So that's 6 days a week we're operating.
So do you see, I know this is a difficult question because there's obviously news coming out of New York City about extended schools, the buildings being closed and virtual extension of virtual experiences. How do you work with the teachers and other constituent groups to plan for someday of returning to the actual classroom experience and wide opening those community schools wide open again?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly always on our mind. It's what we want to do sooner than later if conditions permit. But one of the reasons that we wanted our teachers in 2 to 3 days a week at the school sites teaching remote lessons for children who were at home is that, you know, they can simulate the classroom experience. Kids get extra excited when they can see their teachers in around learning materials and objects in the classroom that teachers can reference. It makes it feel like they really are in class, at least as close as you can get to that. And so while teachers are there 2 or 3 days a week, and most have been great about that, and they've come in, I'd say over 80-85% of our teachers are doing that. Some have asked for accommodations to remain at home, but that's a relatively small number out of the total number of teachers that we have, over 3,000. And I think we only have like 75 or 80 accommodations that have been requested. But the issue is that we want to then plan for the transition to having more students come into school when teachers are also at school teaching the lessons for students. So it's a double intention of why I wanted teachers in the school. And so that's what we're doing. We're developing the plan now, and I expect to, with broad support and broad input from our many constituents, because they're on the reopening committee, I expect to present to the Board of Education on October 7th what our reopening plan will be and who will be some of the first student populations to be brought back to school in person. Again, science and conditions permitting relative to the public health issue.
Is the primary concern, it seems like if you watch the Williamsville school debate going on, which you can't help but see, the thing that the teachers are saying, it's all about their safety. Is that the primary concern? And if so, what conditions do you think ultimately need to be in place for people to feel safe?
Well, I've said all along, even when I closed early than most back in March, that the students and their families' safety, but also our teachers and our staff safety. We have over 7,000 staff, 3,000 teachers, plus 4,000 support staff that work in our schools. And so all of those people have to be made to be safe, actually, and then they have to feel safe psychologically and emotionally while at the workplace. So we have done a great deal. Now, I said that until we get in and pressure test the buildings, walk the buildings, walk through the classrooms, every space in a school, and pressure test it and say, this is great, wow, I didn't know all this had been done. But then also say, well, what about this? How about this? I would like more of this, and could you fix this for my particular classroom? Until all of that is done and get all the input, that's when you make sure that people feel safe. Now, the good news is we've been in school 2 weeks now, and we've had a couple of complaints and a couple of issues that folks said, could you do this, clean this, or take care of this situation? And we do. We respond immediately, and the teachers and the staff have been very appreciative of what we've been able to do. So that's the approach that we take. You can't ever be perfect in an environment like this, but you do a lot. We've done a lot of planning, and you'd be amazed at what we have. We have PPE equipment, certainly masks for everyone that needs it. We sanitize and clean the building several times a week. We have plexiglass installed in many, many places to keep staff separate from one another. We have markings for social distancing. We have signage up about the five main things that we should all do every day and be conscious about, and on and on. So there's a lot that we have done. Sanitizing fluid and materials everywhere. Wipes are everywhere, hospital grade, wipes. So I feel we've done a lot, but again, certainly according to CDC guidelines and other things, we have nurses in the buildings. We take temperatures. The one thing that I have asked for support from the state and from the county on is we're going to need more testing, Peter, once we do start bringing students and staff back in significant numbers. And that testing while we probably can't do, at least I've heard you can't do test everybody every day, and I think that would be expensive and impractical, but I do think we can random test on a regular basis on both our staff populations and our student populations. And I'm pushing hard for that and expect to hear something fairly soon about the support for that. We can't afford it out of our budget, but I think that if we work together to put pressure on, if you want schools to start again in person and you want the businesses to open up fully in our economy, then there are some unfunded mandates that are going to have to be funded. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we won't be able to do it. And so I think that's coming. It's encouraging. But I'd love to follow up with you and say, we did it, Peter, and we're going to get that testing support that we need. Will the contact tracing as a school system let you know who's been in touch with whom in the last, 24, 48 hours? But we do need that testing to occur. There's just no way around it. If we're to keep a good count on what our positives and negative cases are, and thereby track whether we're in a good space or whether we're heading back into a danger zone. And without that data, we're just sort of driving blind. And I don't want to ever take any of our staff or students into a blind situation.
Well, I've circled that October 7th date. I think the whole community is looking to you and the committee that you've assembled for guidance on this, and I think most of us would say we can't wait to hear what happens on that date so that hopefully that one part of our society can begin to go back to something resembling normal. I'm going to just take a call here, Dr. Cash, if you'll bear with me. This is Richard from Buffalo. Richard, how can we help you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks very much, Mr. Hunt.
Truly.
I have been trying to sell my house on the west side, which is super popular.
Mm-hmm.
Houses sell like in an hour, but I just can't seem to sell mine because it was basically given to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when buyers look at that Zillow or whatever else is on the web, they see what a rock bottom price it was given to me for. It was very cheap, but my assessment went from 47 to 198.
Wow.
So I'm looking to move because I'm a single guy, 1,400 square feet. It's a lot to take care of, and I'd rather have a condo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to price it. Do I price it with the assessment, or do I come under that? Because I'll tell you what I bought the house for. It was $20,000, and it's now assessed at $198. So every time people see what I for the house, they're like, well, I'm not going to pay what he's asking. So I'm kind of in a rock and a hard place.
You've got layered a bunch of questions in there, Richard, and I'll just try to take a couple of them on here. Number one, the assessment is really should be a reflection of the value of the property, but generally there's a lot of question about that because the assessor hasn't been inside your home. They don't really know what that property really looks like. So number one, what you really should have is real eyes on it from a real estate professional so that they can provide not only a valuation for you but a set of recommendations to maximize the value of the property in terms of staging, other aspects of the condition of the property. And it may be advisable also to have the property inspected prior to putting it on the market actively because then all the structural issues or construction issues will be addressed or at least known when a buyer comes in to see that house. But the first step really should be having a professional, not just trust an algorithm or something that the municipality tells you they're taxing you on, but really have someone look at it from a standpoint of its market value and also the best conditions to maximize that value. But you're right, the West Side is extremely popular right now, as almost all the neighborhoods are. We had the mayor on a few weeks ago when we were talking about the various neighborhoods, and there's hardly a neighborhood that hasn't been positively affected by the current market conditions. So I don't think you fall outside of that. And I find it difficult to believe that people wouldn't take that into account as they look at your property. I think what you paid for it, based on what you've said, is really irrelevant. And I don't know why anyone would want to punish you effectively because you had the good fortune of having a property sold to you under very favorable conditions for you. So there's obviously a backstory there that's nobody's business.
Right.
So as far as I'm concerned, I think step number one would be to really have a professional take a look at it and give you some thoughtful advice. After that, I would, you know, if it's been on the market for a while, you might be advisable to just take it off for a little while. And
right.
And when you reintroduce it with a new marketing approach. But there's a bunch of things I could go over with you, Richard. And unfortunately, I without seeing the house, there's not much I can say.
Can I ask you one more quick question?
Sure.
And then do financial institutions, my house does need some work. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. you know, for, but it's mostly cosmetic. Is it possible to get a loan to fix the house, to sell it? You know, would a bank or other institution would look favorably if they came in and said, oh, okay, this is what you want to do so you can sell it?
Sure. The best vehicle would probably be a home equity line of credit, and that way, when you do sell it, you can pay it right off. And
that's true.
So that's the fastest and easiest way. A full mortgage would take some time, and it would also there are fees involved that you may not be able to recoup in the sale of the property. So I would advise you to contact a lender about a home equity line of credit.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your time, and I thank Dr. Cash for letting me get my question in.
Well, thank you, Richard, for calling. And I do want to get back to Dr. Cash's topic here, which is in my mind, an extremely important one. But we've only got about 30 seconds left before we have to go to break, Dr. Cash. But I want you to think about one topic area that we haven't really touched on in our two discussions so far, and that is the issue of curriculum and how you structure a curriculum in a time like this, and also what light might be shed on the entire curriculum as you have to go through this investigative process in terms of what's going to have the greatest impact, positive impact on our children. And we'll be right back with more from Our House Jurors after these important questions.
Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome to the West End, Buffalo's premier luxury waterfront development in the heart of downtown. Starting at $850,000, each townhome-style unit features three bedrooms, three and a half bathrooms, high-end finishes, hardwood floors, soaring ceilings, two-car attached garage, and much more. With only 20 units being built, now is the time to make your appointment to view this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate. For more information, visit westinbuffalo.com or call the exclusive listing agent, Deacon Tasker, with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the always updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and through our links to Boston, Massachusetts, and Phoenix, Arizona. You'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before but live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment. Even our second look program, which is a remarkable program, which we're getting enormous response to, which really just says that if you've been qualified or even pre-approved for a mortgage at another lender, it never hurts to make sure you're getting the best rate and terms possible. The way to do that is by calling Hunt Mortgage 633-3700 and just simply say, yeah, I'd like you to give it a second look. That's all you have to do, 633-3700. We have a very special show for you today. This is the second week in a row for the first time in over 20 years that we've done that, where I've invited a guest back just because of the importance of his message in a time like this. My guest is Dr. Kreiner Cash, the superintendent of the Buffalo Public Schools. And I'm sorry we lost a little time in the last segment, Dr. Cash, but because I think what you were saying at that time, right before we took that question, was critically important in terms of the issue relative to preparing the schools for reopening and how important that is. One of the things that were, you know, I experienced just this week, one of our people works in our office has a young child who is in a remote situation right now. And she was describing how the teacher was explaining, take this paper out or go to this, referring to something. And one of the children in the class couldn't figure that out. And apparently there wasn't a parent nearby. And the poor child started crying and the teacher tried to help her and make her feel better. But it was a very sad story, and I'm sure you've heard thousands of stories like that. But where in a classroom, the teacher could have walked over to the student's desk and helped them to figure out what was needed next. And it's just, I worry about the isolation of children, even though they're connected technologically. I'm sure you must wrestle with this all the time. So I'm hoping anyway that the solution that your committee is coming up with will bring children together, at least technologically, in an efficient way. But do you find that the kids at home have all the resources they need for the entire process, or are there gaps? And how do you make sure that the children have what they need?
Well, it's a very good question, Peter. Also layered, and you know, we want kids in school. Kids need to be in school for each other. The teachers who go into this profession, it's a calling for the most of them that I talk to on a regular basis. All educate teachers, principals, every staff, and so we want to be together. We want to be working where we work best, and that's with each other. Now, having said that, we are going to have to change. Things are changing. Some things aren't ever going to go back to what they were before in our world, and we're going to have to be agile and innovative and flexible. And we're going to have to become really creative in making the community a classroom, making the wherever children are, wherever we are, how can we still engage them and activate their minds? That at the end of the day, that's our job. We've got to activate children's minds and get them growing and going as fast and as far as they can. And the sooner we develop independence in that kind of growth and agency in that growth, the better. So it won't be sort of an enabling education anymore, or sort of give children everything. It's going to be a little bit of give and take, and that's at the heart of the education bargain. We'll do this, and then you have to do that at home, as parents, as children yourselves. You're going to have to gain more and develop more independence. So that's just the reality of it all, Peter. That's the nature of it. And yet out of that, I think, will come tremendous resilience and grit, and we'll actually jump ahead by leaps and bounds. We'll go exponentially rather than think that if we just can go back to what we did before and give kids everything that they had before, because even then it wasn't good enough, but by my standard, to get the kind of education outcomes that we need for a thriving democracy. So that's part of what the challenge is. And I hear you, certainly some households don't have everything they need, but then sometimes they have more than we think they have when parents care. And what I've seen in this pandemic is that parents, to a great majority, said they want to keep their children home with them until it's safe to do so. Come back to school. And that's one of the reasons we're in a remote learning situation now, Peter. It wasn't because I said we ought to do it that way. No, we were very methodical about finding out what parents wanted. Mm-hmm. And they want their children safe. They want their children with them. But they want the schools to provide the resources that will help them be good support for their children. They recognize they're not educators.
You know, this is a very interesting time, Dr. Cash, because, excuse me, last weekend in the Wall Street Journal, the lead opinion article was written by Naomi Schaefer Riley, and it suggests that this is an opportunity. It's in that it's I'm quoting her now, an unusual window into education. And it really is an unusual opportunity for the whole of society to take a hard look at education.
Yeah,
she was taught. I don't know if you saw the article, but it was an interview with a gentleman named E.D. Hirsch, who was 92 years old.
Sure.
And did you see the article by chance?
I haven't seen the article, but many of us in education grew up on E.D. Hirsch's some of his philosophy and his works. So continue, sure.
Anyway, he wrote a book, Cultural Literacy, which is probably what you're referring to, what every American needs to know. And his argument is about teaching specifics. And he talked about a huge list of these specifics, including historical figures, events, concepts, literary works, et cetera. And he talks about the fact that in today's system, there doesn't seem to be coherency, that there's been a movement over the years towards encouraging children to kind of take their own pace through their education. And he argues against that a child's mind is a blank slate, as I think he terms it. Education is partly a matter of drawing out a children's innerborn nature, which you just referred to. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about a child's mind as a blank slate. How do you feel about that, and how do you feel about the coherence of the curriculum, and is this an opportunity for all schools to really take a hard look at that as they approach kind of reopening in perhaps a new way?
Yeah, E.D. Hirsch is well known, but he's one of many. I've never followed any one particular person. Education is made up of a panorama of great thinkers and approaches, because you have to be adaptive in this work because no two children are the same. I do agree that there's a lot of specific skills and habits and interests that we need to develop in our young people. But it essentially goes back more to four basic questions, which is the framework of curriculum theory and practice. And those four questions are: what should be taught? I mean, that's an age-old essential question, and it's not one that's automatically understood or everybody agrees upon. But the first question is, what should be taught? Second is, why should it be taught? Third is, how best should we teach it? And fourth is, how do you know whether or not it's been learned by those who you're trying to teach? Those are the four essential questions for any curriculum work. And what's to the coherence question, Peter, is we don't intentionally examine those four questions and put them as a layer over or a screen through every thing that we do and teach in schools. So John Goodlad, one of my mentors, wrote a book called What Schools Are For. And you've got to lay these four questions over everything you do. And so we've evolved over the years into state standards, and now states largely dictate what schools should teach and why they should teach it. But I believe in a COVID environment that we're in, that this question is a fresh opportunity, these four questions, to ask anew. What should we teach our young people? Why should we teach it? And how do we teach it? See, now the how goes to the professionals. They can become very, very creative on how they do it. And you can find things in any household, Peter, and start to open up the mind and curiosity of children. And I don't make any assumptions about what's in or what isn't in certain households. If there's color in the house or in the room, then you can address color. If there are shapes in the room, you can address shapes, and then you can go all the way up to algebra and beyond, just by using creativity and imagination if you know your content really, really well. So what we're trying to do in this environment, remote learning, is to get very creative in grabbing the attention and keeping it of our young people. You have to get their attention. And that does pose a challenge in a COVID environment, because households are so different, and they often aren't blocked out. You know, they have those applications where you can put behind you whatever you want behind you, but that's not the case in most way we're doing it so far. And so you see right into children's homes, into their bedrooms, and sometimes they're in pajamas and they're still in bed. And you have that kind of situation going on, but they're ready to learn and go. It's just that that's the nature of that particular routine. Maybe the parents have already gotten out and gone to work. And some children are latchkey and older siblings trying to manage that routine and so forth. So we know all of that occurs. But we don't make it a lament. We say, okay, what are we going to do to still get our kids learning and engaged? And in terms of the blank slate issue, I wouldn't agree with that. I think that's an old philosophy, kind of like the world is flat. Kids are learning all the time. Their brains are very active and well-developed from early ages. We know that now in neuroscience. And they're learning all the time. It's just that what we educators want to do is try to channel and shape what some of that learning is. So it's very, very fascinating time, but there's also opportunity here while we are also dealing with certainly challenges that we've never dealt with before.
We have to go to break, Dr. Cash, and I want to come back and speak to that, or have you speak to that opportunity, because I think that's really where we need to go. We'll be back with more from our house tours after these important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome to the West End, Buffalo's premier luxury waterfront development in the heart of downtown. Starting at $850,000, each townhome-style unit features three bedrooms, three and a half bathrooms, high-end finishes, hardwood floors, soaring ceilings, two-car attached garage, and much more. With only 20 units being built, now is the time to make your appointment to view this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate. For more information, visit westinbuffalo.com or call the exclusive listing agent, Deacon Tasker, with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the always updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment and the second look program. Call them today, 633-3700. We have a very special show for you. For our last 12 minutes, we're going to be engaged with the superintendent of the Buffalo Schools, Dr. Kreiner Cash, who is sharing with us, I think, tremendous insights in terms of how this pandemic period could be a period of opportunity. Certainly, the word you used prior to the break, Dr. Cash, the word creative, I think it's interesting how challenges like the whole of society are faced with right now breeds creativity. And I'm excited to hear a little bit more about how you intend to be creative in this environment. Obviously, you've had to do a lot so far just to execute a virtual learning experience for the young people. But what's the next horizon, I guess, short of going back into the classroom? What else can we do right now?
Well, a couple of things, Peter. Thank you for the question. One of the things I wanted to emphasize is, and it's never changed, is how important literacy is. Literacy has always been the key to education. And the sooner you learn to read, and then the sooner you learn to develop a love of reading and reading across a broad spectrum of subject matter, your education will just soar and have no real limit to it. And the teaching of literacy, the ability to learn to read, is the good news is it cuts across all spectrum of life, all backgrounds and socioeconomic status in families. Everyone can learn to read. And we know that. Even the most challenged neurologically child with a lot of medical issues can learn and develop great literacy skills. So that's number one. And I see this as an opportunity because it sticks out like a sore thumb now in the COVID environment because parents are with their children more than ever now. And while I know that can be difficult because I hear about it, it's also an opportunity. It's a time when you really can develop a deep understanding of what your children are experiencing and what they go through every day trying to get educated, trying to learn and grow and develop their skills and talents with teachers. It's a very difficult profession. It's a noble profession. It's one of the most beautiful professions in the world is teaching and being an educator. But it's difficult. It's difficult today and perhaps harder than it's ever been is today. But if you're there with your children in this pandemic remote learning environment, you can see firsthand what your child's needs are, what they're going through, and again, how important literacy is. And so for me, it's about closing the circuit. You know, you learn that in simple science about how a battery operates. You close the circuit. And the closing the circuit opportunity for us now, Peter, is to get children back engaged in literacy and reading books. Reading books that will never ever go out of style in my mind, but it has been pushed aside in this sort of social media fanatic world that we live in and all the shortcuts we take in regard to basic literacy. We have to get back to reading books, reading lots of different genres, history, learning about different cultures and people with different languages, on and on and on, all of it throughout the world. So I'm very encouraged that as we partner together with foundations, with businesses, all the groups that we're partnering with right now, civic, government, is to continue to develop a love of learning through reading in our children. And the sooner we develop that, the sooner we will have college-going households, college-going mindsets in these households, because you can be any household that can be college-going value with your children. And when we get that going early on, pre-K, prenatal even, when you sing and read and talk to your children, even while in the womb, then we are back on path toward having the highest educated citizenry in the world. And that's what we need for our democracy to flourish.
I couldn't agree more with everything you just said. And we talked in the last show about education being a great equalizer and one of the two, in my mind anyway, the pillars of how people will be, how anyone can be successful. And certainly education is one of those pillars. And the other, obviously, is the perhaps not so obviously, is the home environment that the child comes from. And you touched on this when you said, in terms of where we can be creative and learn through this experience, when you talked about really interpersonal understanding that takes place when you're around each other as much as you are during times like these. And one of the things that you also mentioned, which strikes me as I watch young people today, particularly my children's children, and that is the influence of video. It's just unbelievable, not just the amount of stuff that comes at these kids, but it's just everywhere, and you can't get away from it. It seems to me how much, I guess, it could be an obstacle to doing what you suggest, which is to just develop a love of reading. Is there any studies done about the impact of all the, like you mentioned, social media, but also just the entire explosion of a video attack on our psyche? Is there any study of how that's distracted people away from the fundamentals of reading?
Absolutely, Peter, and I certainly hear you in that concern. The studies, and there are many, but some of the emerging studies are in neuroscience, which has always been a field that fascinated me through the years. Is how our brain functions, you know, what stimulates it, what represses it. And certainly we know that screen time, too much screen time, has a deleterious effect on our young people's brain and brain growth. It can be harmful, in fact, particularly in young children. But it's like anything. It's like books. Even books, all books aren't good books to read. Mm-hmm. You've got to be selective, and you've got to choose good material, educated with educational value, in these videos and in your screen approaches, and then try to limit it throughout the day. My concerns, and the research goes over into sleep habits of our young people as well, is when young people are 12, 13 hours a day on some kind of screen, whether it be their cell phone, video games, videos, TV, laptops. When you add all of that, computer screens, and you have a 13, 14-hour day on those kinds of things, not all of which are educationally valuable, frankly, that's a waste of time. We're wasting time. And we can't, there's only 1,440 minutes in a day. And I've always said how you use those minutes will determine your educational trajectory, your life occupational trajectory, and decisions you make about how you use those 1,440 minutes each day. So I'm trying to get, and what we're trying to do in the curriculum is get students engaged in really, really wonderful, exciting, stimulating curriculum that lifts their voice, lifts their awareness, and grows their brain, and grows their decision making and independence. And that's kind of always what we said good education is, to draw out educare, educarum. But you got to be selective. You got to be selective. And parents can be helpful in being selective about the materials that their young people and their children are engaged in. We certainly are being selective in what we're setting up as menu of resources to expose our young people to.
One last question for you. We've only got 2 minutes left, Dr. Cash, and that is always, and I try to see what we can do to help you, in effect. One of the questions that we received by text was about the funding needed for that you mentioned needed more funding that was needed. If that funding isn't forthcoming, how could the average citizen help you volunteer-wise in any way, shape, or form?
Well, again, everybody, the Buffalo is a very generous town. That's the one thing there's a number of things, but that's certainly one thing I love about it. A little bit segregated, a little bit divided in terms of where we live, where we go to church, that kind of thing, where we eat even. But I do think that we reach out and we try to help each other. And there's a lot of what we call in-kind sort of resources that over the years I've just been remarked. It's been remarkable to me. So books are important. Computer devices that have, or tablets for young children that have really good applications on them that are educational, providing support for those tablets, because they can be used for learning devices. And as you know, having grandchildren, young people can navigate their way around these devices pretty good. But you want educational games and, you know, good children's books, multicultural children's books as well on these tablets when we give them to children. You don't just give them blank things. You know, try to load the software as well. So those kinds of supports will help see us through, because kids can continue to learn even when schools are in a shutdown mode. If they get interested in something, we see that they will learn with sky no limit once they're interested.
On that note, Dr. Cash, we do have to go. I want to thank you again for being the only guest in the history of this show that's been on 2 weeks in a row. You've added tremendous insight, I think, to this very, very important issue that faces our community, will always face our community, but particularly in times like these. Dr. Kreiner-Cash, thank you for being with us this week. I want to thank all our listeners for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.